All right, thank you. So first of all, I'd like to thank you all for coming in the morning and for giving me this opportunity to present my work. So this is this talk is based on my the papers I wrote over the couple of years. So which are these, one with cousin of Mariyoshi, he's in Tokyo now, and also based on work in progress with Kevin. So okay, let me start. So here, in the area of theoretical physics, we have integrable systems, which is a vast area of research. And this talk is about integrable systems. But there's an overlapping area, which is also very big, and that's quantum field theories. Okay? And inside integrable systems, we have quantum integrable systems. And inside quantum field theories, we have supersymmetric quantum field theories. And there's an overlap between these two regions. And namely, for example, Nekrasov-Shvili correspondence falls into this region. Okay. And in this talk, I will further narrow the class of quantum integrable systems I'd like to consider, and that's integrable lattice models. So these are statistical mechanical models where spins are located on according to a lattice pattern. Okay. And integrable lattice models may be thought of as particular class of quantum integrable systems. And actually, there's yet another vast area of research which I've not drawn here yet, and that's string theory. Okay. And the all overlap with one another. And my talk, this talk is on this region where we have integrable lattice models, supersymmetric quantum field theories, and string theory overlapping. Okay. So the main message of this talk is the following. So integrable lattice models can be embedded into string theory. So this is the main message. Okay, and you may say, well, you may ask, why do we want to do that? What does this buy us? And it actually buys us a lot. So today I'm going to do the following. So first, I will construct an integrable lattice model that unifies three different integrable lattice models into one. Okay, and furthermore, I will relate this unified lattice model to four-dimensional n equals one supersymmetric quantum field theories. And using this correspondence between integrable lattice models and 4D n equals 1 Suzy quantum field theories to elucidate the physics of surface operators in these four-dimensional field theories. And moreover, I will also explain briefly relations of this construction to the work of Costello Kevin, who is there, out there, in 2013, where he constructed the famous 8-vertex model. So that's one of the most famous integrable lattice models using four-dimensional gauge theory. So that's the work by Kevin and also the topic of the forthcoming paper by Kevin and with Witten Yamazaki. And also I will explain briefly the relation to the Nekrasov-Shvili correspondence. Okay, so this is a plan. So what I'm going to do first is to introduce these three integrable lattice models, which I'd like to unify into one using string theory. Okay, so I'm going to introduce these models. Okay, so let's proceed. The first model I'd like to introduce is Belvin's model, which was introduced by Belvin in 81. So it's a lattice model in statistical mechanics. So, all right, so here I have a lattice, 2x3 lattice, placed in blue background. So this color actually has a physical meaning and it'll be clear later. And so lattice is made of dashed lines, okay? And these circles are spin sites. So they are placed on the edges of the lattice, okay? So, and on each, at each spin site, there is a spin variable. And spin variables I denote by letters I, J, K, L, and so on. they can take n different values, integers 1 from 1 to n, where n is a fixed integer larger or equal to 2. Okay. And so, and moreover, to each lattice line, we pick a complex parameter u, and that's called a spectral parameter assigned to that line. So here, in this case, we have 5 lines making up a lattice. So we have 5 spectral parameters, u1, u2, u3, u4, and u5. Okay, and in this picture, I've placed this lattice on the torus. So I've imposed periodic boundary conditions. But in principle, you can draw this lattice on any surface sigma. In this talk, throughout this talk, sigma is just a torus. Okay? Now, to define this model, you have to tell me how these spins interact. Okay? And interaction between spins is governed by an operator, RB, which is called the R matrix of the model. So RB, well, this operator depends on the spectral parameter U. Okay? Now, suppose, let's look at this configuration. Okay, so you have 2 lines crossing, and there is a vertex here, intersection here. So this is a local picture around a particular vertex. Okay, and suppose the spectral parameters assigned to these lines are U1 and U2 respectively, and there are 4 surrounding spin sites. Okay, and suppose the spins take values I, J, and K, and L, like this picture. Okay, and by definition, this So to this local configuration of 4 spins surrounding a vertex, you want to assign energy. If you know the energy, you can construct something called Boltzmann weight, which is the exponential minus energy. Okay, and by definition, the ij, comma kl component of this R matrix, this operator, at value u12, which is the difference u1 minus u2. Is the Boltzmann weight associated to this configuration? Okay, so if you know R matrix, if you know the R matrix from the matrix elements, you know the Boltzmann weight. Okay, and as I just said, this R matrix RB depends on the spectral parameter U, but in addition, it depends on 2 more complex parameters, tau and gamma, and where tau is in the upper half plane. So I pick tau and gamma and fix them once and for all. Okay. Now the partition function of this model is defined just as you learned in statistical mechanics. So what you have to do is the following. You pick a spin configuration, and once you know the spin configuration, you know all those local Boltzmann weights from all vertices. So you take the product of them all, okay, and then you sum over all possible spin configurations. So that defines the partition function, and this defines the Belfi model. Okay, so now it remains to I still have to say what this RB is, and explicitly RB. The matrix elements of RB can be written in terms of theta functions. And you see that the parameters tau appear as the norm of the theta functions, and gamma appears in the argument, and so on. All right, the explicit formulas like this are not so important in this talk. But the point is, you can just write it down so you can make calculations, okay? So you don't have to remember this. These formulas. So we have this integer parameter big N. When big N is 2, what we get, so this Belbin's model reduces to Baxter's 8 vertex model. So this famous integrable lattice model, which was introduced by Baxter in 71. So Belbin's model is a generalization of the 8 vertex model. Okay? What's important is not the explicit formula like this, but what's important is the fact that this R matrix satisfies the Young-Baxter equation, which is this equation here. All right, so there's a graphic way of representing the Young-Baxter equation, and graphically, the Young-Baxter equation looks like the equality between two different configurations of three intersecting lines. Okay, so the graphically the Young-Baxter equation looks like this. Let's look at the left-hand side. So you have three lines intersecting, okay, and to each intersection you want to assign one factor of RB. So here you have a crossing between the second line and third line here, and that corresponds to RB 2, 3, this factor, okay? And if you follow the direction of the of these lines, next you will hit the crossing between the first line and the third line, and to this crossing you assign this factor RB 1, 3, and finally you have the crossing between the first and second line, this crossing, and at this crossing you assign RB 1 to this factor. So that's the left hand side, and similarly you have the right hand side. Okay, so what the Young-Baxter equation says is that if you, for example, take this vertical line and slide it to the right until you reach the right-hand side, under this operation, nothing changes to the physics. The partition function is invariant under this operation. So that's the meaning of the Young-Baxter equation. Okay. So the Young-Baxter equation is actually a very highly overconstrained system of equations. So we actually have n to the sixth equations but we only have n to the fourth unknowns. So it's almost like a miracle that non-trivial solutions to Young-Baxter equations exist at all. But actually, there are solutions and there are many. Okay. But in any case, from the fact that RB, the R matrix, satisfies the Young-Baxter equation, it follows that the model, the Belvin model, defined by this R matrix is integrable. Okay, so up to now, everything is very standard. But one thing I'd like to emphasize is that this integrability is really quantum integrability, in the sense that there is a correspondence between two-dimensional classical integrable classical lattice models and one-dimensional quantum spin chains. So what you have to do is, you can look at the vertical direction as the time direction of the quantum system, then you get a correspondence between 2D statistical mechanical model and 1 plus 1D quantum system. And therefore, this integrability, you may think of it as really a quantum integrability. And under this correspondence between 2D lattice models and 1D quantum spin chains, what Belvin model actually corresponds to XYZ spin chain, Heisenberg spin chain, or rather SLM version of that. Okay, so this is the first model I wanted to introduce. So is everything clear so far? Yep. Okay, great. Thanks. So now the second model I'd like to introduce is Jimbo-Miwa-Okada model, was introduced by them in 87. So this JMO model is much like Belvin's model, but there's a crucial difference. Well, the difference is that it carries an additional parameter lambda, and it's in the Cartan subalgebra of SLM. So lambda is a traceless, complex traceless diagonal matrix. Okay, and this lambda is called the dynamical variable of the model. Now, what you have to do is, all right, so you again have a lattice made of dashed lines, but now in this case, I'd like to place it in an uncolored background. And spins are again located at the edges of the lattice. Okay. But now what you have to do with the dynamical variable lambda is that you specify its value on one of the faces and fix it. Okay. And the value of the dynamical variable has to jump across when you cross lines. Okay. So here's the rule to determine how lambda jumps. So if you can express lambda in terms of n tuple of complex parameters, lambda 1, lambda 2, up to lambda n, which add up to 0, because so these are the diagonal entries of the diagonal matrix, which represents lambda, okay? And if there is a line here, and this line carries a spin, so there's a spin site on this line, and if the spin variable takes value I, then if the value of the dynamical variable is lambda above this line, then below this line, lambda becomes lambda minus gamma times omega I, where gamma is a parameter. Remember, we picked two parameters, tau and gamma, so gamma is that gamma. And omega I is a particular vector, which is defined by this equation. Okay, and here EI is just is the standard basis vector in CN. This omega I is actually the weight of this EI in the vector representation of SLM. Okay, so lambda jumps. So if you specify the value of the dynamical variable to be lambda here, and you pick a spin configuration, then the value of the dynamical variable on any other phase is determined according to this jumping rule. Okay? Now, so because this model is just like Belvin's model, but the only difference is that there is this additional parameter lambda, so we can also specify the bottom weight using an R matrix, just as in the Belvin model. So in this case, the corresponding R matrix is called Felder's R matrix. So RF, it depends on the spectral parameter U, or rather the difference of the spectral parameters of the two lines. And it also depends on the value of the dynamical variable. Okay. So suppose you have the crossing of two dashed lines and spins IJKL surrounding the crossing. Then you are, and suppose the value of the dynamical variable is lambda here, okay? And to this configuration, the bottom weight for this configuration is given by ij, kl component of the R matrix, okay? Now, if you look at this picture, the value of the dynamical variable lambda must jump according to the rule I just explained. So when you starting from the top left corner and going down, lambda becomes lambda minus gamma omega I. Okay. On the other hand, if you go to the right, then lambda becomes lambda minus gamma omega L. But the value of the dynamical variable on the bottom right corner can either be expressed as lambda minus gamma times omega I plus omega J if you go first down and then to the right. Or if you first go to the right and then down, then the value of the dynamical variable is lambda minus gamma times omega k plus omega l. And these two expressions must be equal because we are talking about the same phase. Okay? And this condition imposes that this matrix element should vanish unless omega I plus omega j is equal to omega k plus omega l. Okay, so that's just for consistency. And for other components, for components satisfying that condition, they are actually non-vanishing and can be again written in terms of theta functions. Okay, so again, explicit formula is not so important. And I'd like to mention that when big N equals 2, this model, JML model, is known as the 8 vortex SOS model. Okay, so it's so JML model is a generalization of that model. All right, so now, just like Belvin's R matrix, Felder's R matrix satisfies the Young-Bax equation, but this time we get something called the dynamical Young-Bax equation. Well, it's slightly different from the ordinary dynamical Young-Bax equation. So the only difference graphically is that you have to specify the value of the dynamical variable on one of the faces, and I pick this face, and specify the value of the dynamical variable to be lambda here. So graphically, there's only this change. Okay, but nevertheless, from this dynamical Young-Baxley equation, it follows that this model, JMO model, is integrable. Okay, so this is a second integrable lattice model I wanted to introduce. Now, okay, so let me move on. And here's the last integrable lattice model I'd like to introduce. So that's called Bajanov-Sergeyev model, and it's relatively new. It was introduced by these people in 2010 for SU2 case and 2011 for general SUN case. So Bajanov-Sergeyev model is a little bit, weird in the sense that it's defined on this kind of tricolor checkerboard pattern. Okay, so notice that there are two kinds of lines, either solid or dotted line. And there are three kinds of faces, blue face, red face, or uncolored face. And there are actually four kinds of crossings. And as before, each line carries a complex parameter U, spectral parameter. And in this case, each uncolored face, there's a dynamical variable, lambda. And these variables are all independent in this case. And these dynamical variables supported on the uncolored faces are the spin variables of this BS model. Okay, so let me give you the Boltzmann weights of this model. So as I said, there are four kinds of crossings, and which I draw here. 1, 2, 3, 4 kinds of crossings. So suppose, let's look at this first one. So this is about the crossing between two solid lines with spectral parameters U1 and U2. And on the uncolored faces, there are dynamical variables, and so lambda and mu, okay? So to this configuration, you want to assign Boltzmann weight, and Boltzmann weight is the right-hand side, okay? All right, so again, the formula is not so important, but let me point out that this gamma is something called the elliptic gamma function. And this fact is kind of important later, okay? But anyway, so here's the formula for the Boltzmann weights. Now, what you have to do to compute the partition function is that, so you pick a spin configuration. So namely, you pick a configuration of dynamical variables on uncolored faces. You calculate the Boltzmann weights. You multiply them all, and then sum over spin variables. But in this case, spin variables are dynamical variables, and they are continuous. So instead of summation, we have to integrate over them, and with this particular measure, which I write down here. Okay, so this is the Bajanov-Sergeyev model, and this Bajanov-Sergeyev model can also be reformulated in terms of an R matrix, just like before. Okay, so to do that, I want to introduce a new notation, which is the double line, this one, which carries a pair of spectral parameters U and V. And this is nothing but the shorthand notation of a pair of a dotted line and a solid line with spectral parameters U, V. Okay. So the R matrix of the Bajanov-Sergeyev model, which I call RBSDS, is associated to the crossing of two double lines placed in the blue background, okay? And there are four spins surrounding the crossing. And in the original notation, it looks like this picture, okay? And you have dynamical variables lambda mu, nu, sigma, and the Boltzmann weight for this configuration is the lambda mu comma nu sigma component of this R matrix. Okay, so this is the R matrix of the of the Bajanov-Sergeyev model. And you see that if you make a lattice using double lines in a blue background on a torus, and if you express everything in terms of the in the original notation, then you'll see that you indeed get the original tricolor checkerboard pattern. Okay? And all right, so one thing to emphasize is that this R matrix is really an infinite dimensional R matrix, because and it's actually an integral operator because the indices are continuous variables. So when you multiply R matrices, instead of summing over the indices, you want to integrate them over. So you get, well, these are integral operators. But in any case, you can just plug this R matrix into the Young-Baxter equation, and you'll see that, well, it solves the Young-Baxter equation due to some very non-trivial integral identity satisfied by the elliptic gamma function. Okay, so let me summarize. Let me make a summary of the three models I just introduced. The first one is Belvin's model. So its R matrix is RB, which is a crossing of two dashed lines in blue background. Okay, and at this point, let me also introduce another R matrix, RB tilde, which corresponds to the two dashed lines in the red background. And it's just the transports of RB. Or RB tilde also satisfies the Young-Baxter equation. Okay, so that's Belvin's model. The second model I introduced was Jimbo Miwaoka model, and it's described by Felder's R matrix, and that corresponds to the crossing of two dashed lines in an uncolored background with spectral with dynamical variables specified on the top left corner. Okay, and the third model I introduced was Bajanov-Sergeyev model, whose R matrix corresponds to the crossing of two double lines in blue background. And in the original notation, it corresponds to this configuration. Okay, so I introduced these three models. Now, the point is that string theory tells me that these three models can be unified into one. So that's the content of my work, in my latest work. So what do I mean by this? So what I mean by this is the following. So we introduce different kinds of lines and different kinds of faces, and you can actually combine them together into a single picture without spoiling the integrability. Okay, so that's what I mean by this statement. All right, so more concretely, if you can place different kinds of lines into a single picture, you can make more kinds of crossings. Actually, you can create four new kinds of crossings, because now dashed line can intersect a solid line or dotted line. Okay, and you can introduce four new kinds of crossings. And these crossings, new crossings, are called intertwining operators, and they are functions of the spectral parameter and the dynamical variable, but they are also n by n matrices. So why n by n matrices? Because each of them contains a single dashed line, and on each edge of a dashed line, you have a spin variable which can take n different values. So in total, there are n times n different values and these what two spin variables can take. So each of them is n by n matrix. Okay. So now these and because we have more different kinds of lines in a single picture, we can write down more Young-Baxter equations. For example, you can write down the Young-Baxter equation that involves two solid line and a single dashed line, like this one, or two dashed line and a single solid line, like this one. So now we have many more Young-Baxter equations. So what we now have, three different R matrices and intertwining operators, and they must solve many different kinds of Young-Baxter equations at once. So that's very, very non-trivial. Okay? But string theory tells you that this can be, well, this is possible. And all right, so let me remark that the second Young-Baxter equation, this one, involves on the left-hand side, you have the Belvin's R matrix coming from the crossing of two dashed lines in blue background. On the right-hand side, you have Felder's R matrix coming from the crossing of in a non-colored phase. So this second Young-Baxter equation relates RB and RF, and this is called the vortex phase correspondence. But anyway, so the question is whether we can find these intertwining operators which simultaneously solve many Young-Baxter equations like these. And actually, solutions exist. So here I show you the solutions. Well, of course, you don't really have to remember this or anything. You can, if you're interested, you can download the slides and you can always come back to do some computations if you want. So I found solutions. This is a particular solution. And the analysis, I followed an analysis very similar to the one carried out by Derkachev and Spiridonov for n equals 2, but this solution is for any n, and there have been some partial results known in the literature from early 90s. Okay, now, so the question is why it sounds as if something miracle happens, because you know finding a single solution to a single Young-Baxter equation is already difficult. But here we have a set of R matrices which solve many Young-Baxter equations. Why is that possible? Well, so here's the place string theory comes into play. So, well, these intertwining operators exist because we can actually construct our model, this unified integrable lattice model, using brains in string theory. So let me explain this. So suppose let's consider type 2B string theory and take a stack of n coincident d5 brains and wrap them around a 3 times 1 times sigma. Remember, this sigma is a surface. In this talk, it's just a torus. Okay. And now take an NS5 brain and let it hit the d5 brains, like in this picture. So you have nd5 brains, and NS5 brain comes from the bottom, and they collide. What happens at this point is that they merge into a bound state called n comma 1 5 brain. Okay, in the lattice model picture, the region corresponding to the n comma 1 5 brain is the region I colored in blue. Okay, and the uncolored region supports a pure d5 brains. And the border between uncolored and blue background is this solid line. Okay, now you can also consider the situation that the NS5 brain comes from the opposite direction, from the top, from above, and it collides with the d5 brains, and they merge into a bound state. In this case, you get n comma minus 1 5 brain, and that corresponds to the red region. And the border between the red region and uncolored region is this dotted line in the lattice model. Okay, and you can now invoke topological quantum field theory arguments, and that tells you quite generally that the partition function of this brain system must be equal to the partition function of some integrable lattice model. So this is basically Kevin's argument, which he used in his construction of the 8 vortex model or 6 vortex model, and which I adapted in this situation. All right, now, so these lines we now see that the lines of the lattice model can be realized as junction of brains. But you now remember that Young-Baxter equation comes from from, you know, it can be obtained by moving around lines. Therefore, the Young-Baksa equation can now be interpreted in terms of brain movements. Okay, now I just told you that the partition function of this brain system is a partition function of an integrable lattice model, but I didn't specify which lattice model. And to find out which lattice model arises from this kind of brain picture, what you do is the following. Okay, now you have a stack of DeFi brains, and they support six-dimensional superimage theory, and this theory is placed on S3 times S1 times sigma. And actually, NS5 brains wrap this entire four-dimensional part S3 times S1. Okay. Now, what you do is you take sigma, you make sigma small. Then six-dimensional superimage theory reduces to a four-dimensional supersymmetric theory defined on S3 times S1. So in this way, you can get a four-dimensional n equals one supersymmetric theory on S3 times S1. And this theory, you can actually explicitly write down the Lagrangian of this theory. All right, and this theory is described by a quiver diagram. So here I reproduce this checkerboard lattice pattern, checkerboard lattice for the which defines the Bajanov-Sergeyev model. It looks like this, and these circles are where spin variables, dynamical variables live. And from this picture, you can draw this kind of diagram. So that's a planar quiver drawn on the torus. All right, and in this diagram, each circle is now an SUN gauge group, and each line represents a Karo multiplet. So this diagram encodes the contents of the gauge group and matter of this four-dimensional gauge theory. Right, so now we can translate this lattice model, this picture, to a four-dimensional gauge theory. And now this gauge theory is placed on S3 times S1, so you can compute the partition function of this gauge theory. And this can be done exactly using localization computation. So you can localize the path integral. Then if you do that, what you get is something called supersymmetric index of this theory. And it turns out the formula for the supersymmetric index of this theory is exactly the formula for the partition function of the Bajanov-Sergeyev model. So therefore, we identify the integrable lattice model, which arises from the brain setup, is the Bajanov-Sergeyev model. And what's interesting is that if you look at the Young-Baksa equation and try to interpret that in gauge theory, you'll see that the Young-Baksa equation is a consequence of a duality in gauge theory called Zerbach duality. So I don't really have time to explain this, but it's a very interesting fact. Okay, so here I just explained how to construct the Bajanov-Sergeyev model using brains. But in our picture, we had another kind of line. So that's a dashed line. How do we create the dashed line using brains? Well, you use D3 brains. So suppose you have a D3 brain and it comes from a transverse direction and hit the D5 brains. And the intersection between D3 and D5 is a dashed line. So that's how you get a dashed line using brains. All right, so suppose you have a Bajanov-Sergeyev model, and now you create a dashed line using a D3 brain. So it inserts a dashed line like this one. Okay, then locally in the neighborhood of the dashed line, you get this kind of picture. And this is something called a transfer matrix in the lattice model. Okay. So if you insert the dashed line, then it acts on the partition function of the model, lattice model, by a transfer matrix. And transfer matrix is a difference operator which shifts dynamical variables. Right? Why is that? Because you remember dynamical variables, the value of the dynamical variable jumps across a dashed line. So inserting this dashed line just gives a shift in the value of the dynamical variables. Okay, but this D3 brain actually wraps a two torus inside the four-dimensional space-time S3 times S1. So from the point of view of the four-dimensional n equals one theory, corresponding to the Bajanov-Sergeyev model, the D3 brain creates a subs operator. Therefore, subs operators in this four-dimensional n equals one theory correspond to transform matrices in the Bajanov-Sergeyev model, in the lattice model. So this gives a new way of understanding surface operators. Okay? Now, so let me use something called L operators. Graphically, well, there are two kinds of L operators, which are called LF and LB. Graphically, they look like this or this one. In terms of these operators, the transform matrix, this picture, can be obtained by concatenating these L operators and then taking a trace. Taking a trace is nothing but imposing a periodic boundary condition in the horizontal direction. All right, okay, so you see that, you know, either you can use LF or LB, and they both of them lead to the same transform matrix. Okay, so transform matrix, this transform matrix consists of what can be created using LF or LB, these L operators. Now, LF satisfies a so-called RLL relation with field as R matrix. So what you have to do is you just write down this kind of equation graphically. In terms of the letters, it corresponds to RF times L1 times L2 is equal to L2 times L1 times RF, okay? So is this clear? So RF corresponds to this crossing, and you have two L operators coming from here, this region or this region. All right, so LF satisfies this equation, and this equation is actually a defining equation of something called the elliptic quantum group. So LF actually gives an infinite dimensional representation of the elliptic quantum group. On the other hand, LB satisfies two RLL relations, one with RB and another one with R matrix of the Bajanov-Sergeyev model. All right, so because you can write down either this kind of equation or this kind of equation, the first equation, you have the R matrix of the Bajanov-Sergeyev model, and here you have RB and RB. The second one contains the R matrix of the Belvin model from here. Okay, and this fact that the single L operator LB satisfies two independent RLL relation is actually the elliptic version of a very famous relation between Karel Potts model and six vortex model, which was discovered by Bajanov, Stroganov, and others in the 90s. So this is the elliptic lift of that result, in the sense that if you take a certain trigonometric limit of the Bajanov-Sergeyev model, you can get the Karel-Potts model. So in this sense, this is the elliptic version of that corresponds. You take a rational limit. But anyway, so let me move on. So I just told you that you can make a transform matrix by concatenating L operators and taking a trace, and that corresponds to a surface operator in the four-dimensional n equals one theory. Now, if you take k copies of L operators, then this surface operator is actually really a surface operator for class SK theories. So it's this is a generalization of famous class S theories, but class SK theories for K greater than one are for the n equals one theories rather than n equals two. So when K is one, so class SK theories are just class S theories. And surface operators in classes theories play a very important roles, and for example, in the AGT correspondence. Here we get the version for n equals 1 theories. Okay, and these surface operators in class S theories, so when k equals 1, can come from 6 dimensions, because class S theories can be obtained by compactifying 62 column 0 theory on a rim surface. And this 6D theory has codimension 2 defects and codimension 4 defects, and both of them can lead to surface operators when you compactify them on the surface. In this case, the surface operators we get from transform matrices are those coming from codimension 4 defects. And it's known that these codimension 4 defects can be classified by irreducible representations of SLM. Okay, and so far we have talked about L operators associated to the vector representation of SLM, Cn, so c to the power n. But actually, there is something called a fusion procedure, which allows you to construct a dashed line associated to any irreducible representation R, not necessarily the fundamental representation. All right, so this fusion procedure is nothing but the operator product expansion of the OPE of surface operators. So from the very basic surface operator, by taking tensor products and projecting to appropriate subspaces, you can get more general surface operators associated to any irreducible representations. And now you can take the results from computed by transform matrices and try to match the results from purely gauge theory computations. And so there are various cases where gauge theory results are known. The first result is when you have a vector representation and k is 1. Okay, and in this case, you can reproduce the result vector rep with k arbitrary. You can also get a transform matrix also reproduces the gauge theory result. Or you can take k equals 1, but you take the representation to be totally anti-symmetric reps. Then in this case, transform matrix gives you something called Reusenauer's difference operators. So you have a family of mutually commuting difference operators, and that's what you get. And this result from the transform matrix matches the gauge theory result. And you can extend this computation to symmetric representations, and that's trying to match the transform matrix with gauge theory computations with my collaborator Vasco from here. But the unfortunately, the complete result in this case is not known from gauge theory side. But from the transform matrix, you can just write down the how surface operator should act on the supersymmetric index. So it's completely trivial from the transform matrix point of view. And in other cases, there's absolutely no results from gauge theory side. So there's no way to compare. Okay. So now, in the remaining 10 minutes or so, I want to explain how this construction I'm talking about is related to Costello's theory and Nekrasov-Shashvili correspondence. So first, this is work in progress with Kevin. All right, so in order to relate my construction to Kevin's construction, what I want to do is, first of all, replace this four-dimensional spacetime S3 times S1 with R2 times a 2 torus. All right, so here I introduce some parameters epsilon tau. This tau is just the modulus of the torus. And this epsilon refers to a twist in the product. So as you go around the one cycles of the torus, the R2 is rotated by angle either real part of epsilon or imaginary part of epsilon, depending on which cycle of the torus you follow. All right. So the brain setup can be summarized in this, as in this table. All right. So this is space-time. So space-time contains T star sigma, the cotangent bundle, and you take n coincident D5 brains placed at the zero of this R2, but they wrap the whole R, whole four-dimensional space-time R2 times D2, and also wraps the sigma, which is the zero section of the cotangent bundle. Right now, you also have NS5 brains and D3 brains. NS5 brains, they wrap the four-dimensional space-time, and but wraps another surface in T star sigma, such that the intersection between sigma and sigma prime, these two surfaces, is a curve in sigma, and this curve is either a solid line or dotted line, and similarly for D3 brain. So D3 brain wraps sigma double prime inside T star sigma, and the intersection of sigma and sigma double prime is a dashed line. Okay, so we have this, we started from this brain construction. Now what we have to do is, all right, so we apply a chain of duality. First is duality, and then T duality on the torus, and then finally again S duality. So what happens after the S duality is that D5 brains become NS5 brains, NS5 brains become D5 brains, and D3 brains remain the same, okay? And if you then apply T duality, first of all, the torus becomes dual torus T to tilde. NS5 brains remain the same. D5 brains lose two dimensions and become D3 brains. D3 brains become D1 brains. Okay, and then finally, S duality again. So in the end, you end up with this configuration. All right, so D3 brain became D1 brain, and that's converted to a fundamental string. Okay, and D3 and F1 here are supported at points in the dual torus. But not only that, in addition to that, because of the twisting here, this epsilon or minus epsilon I introduced in originally, there is a non-trivial flux introduced in the background. So namely, C2 is non-zero here. So this is called a flux background. So we get this brain configuration in a flux trap background. Okay? So I reproduce this final brain setup here. Now, you have n D5 brains, and that supports six-dimensional super-Yamis theory on R2 times T2 tilde times sigma. But in the presence of this flux trap, this six-dimensional theory is omega-deformed. So there's an omega deformation along this R2 direction. Now, these three brains create codimension three defects in this six-dimensional theory. And fundamental strings create Wilson lines in this string theory. Okay, so you get, so after this chain of dualities, you get six-dimensional omega-deformed super-Yamils, okay, and some codimension three defects and Wilson lines. Actually, you can perform localization computation here again. If you do that, six-dimensional theory becomes four-dimensional theory because you have a two-dimensional omega deformation here. So you get a four-dimensional theory defined on T2 tilde times sigma, whose action takes this form. So this T2 must really be T2 tilde, okay? But anyway, so you have 1 over epsilon multiplying the action, and here dz bar is the one form on T2, and you also have transient action, well, functional here, and here 1 over epsilon multiplies this action, so epsilon plays the role of the Planck constant. All right, now in this theory, in this four-dimensional theory, you have Wilson lines and Toft lines and so on created by F1 and D3s. And Wilson lines, if you have Wilson lines crossing and making a lattice configuration, then Kevin showed that from this configuration, if you take the correlation function, then you get the partition function of either Belvin model or JMO model, depending on how precisely you set up this system. And from codimension 3 defects, they become top lines in the four-dimensional theory. And from this, you can construct something called boxes Q operators. So that's what we hope. So anyway, this explains that my construction is really equivalent to Kevin's construction through this chain of dualities. Now, finally, let me try to explain a bit the relation between this construction to Nekrasov-Shvili story. Okay, so let me review the Nekrasov-Shvili story a bit. So suppose you have four-dimensional n equals two gauge theory, and let's compactify it on a circle so that the theory is defined on R3 times one. At low energies, if you go to low energies on the Coulomb branch, this theory reduces to a three-dimensional theory because one of the four directions is compactified to a circle. Okay, so you get a three-dimensional theory in the infrared, and this three-dimensional theory has n equals four supercharges, so namely eight supersymmetries, and it's a Sigma model whose target space is hyperkähler manifold M. So M has three independent complex parameters. Sorry, complex structures obeying the quaternion relation. And there's a special complex structure. And in this special complex structure, this target space is actually the phase space of a complex integrable system. So it's a circle vibration over an affine space. This base space is nothing but the Coulomb branch of the uncompactified four-dimensional theory. And you have... So above each point in this Coulomb branch on R4, you have a complex torus. And so this is the phase space. Now, what Nekrasov-Shvili says is that if you omega deform this theory and replace R3 times this one to R2 epsilon times R times this one, then if you follow the same procedure, this integrable system gets quantized. So this is essentially the content of the Nekrasov-Shvili correspondence. Omega deformation quantizes this integrable system. Now, take a particularly nice theory. So consider n equals two gauge theory, with gauge group SUM with 2n hypermultiplies in the fundamental. Okay. In this case, what we get is something called the quantum version of trigonometric Godin model. And this model is known to be dual to XXX spin chain of length n. And this XXX spin chain is a little bit weird because here you get a non-compact version of that. Namely, the representations are in general infinite dimensional. So spins don't have to be half integers. They can take any, actually, I think, complex values. Okay? And indeed, what Chen, Dory, Hollowood, and Lee found was that vacua of the omega deformed version of this theory are in one-to-one correspondence with states in the Hilbert space of the spin chain. And the Zerbach-Witten curve of the theory corresponds is nothing but the spectral curve of this spin chain. So the question is, where is the spin chain hiding in this theory? So, and can we understand this phenomenon using our construction? Okay, so this is the question we'd like to address. Now, in our construction, the transform matrix. So let's look at how transform matrix appears. Okay. So and let's moreover uplift everything to the elliptic level. So instead of the XXX spin chain, let's consider the XYZ spin chain. And in our brain construction, the transform matrix of the XYZ spin chain arises from this kind of picture. So this was a transform matrix. Okay, here this background on the background. So on the screen, you really have 2D fibrains wrapping on the screen, and the dashed line is the intersection of these three brain, which comes from the transverse direction. And these three brains hits the 2D fibrains, and the intersection is the dashed line. And this blue region is the region where you have NS5 brain combining the D5 brain. So NS5 brain come from transport direction, hit the D5 brains, and then NS5 brain bend a little bit, and it combines with D5 brains over this blue region, and then it leaves the D5 brains and goes into the screen, okay? So this is the brain construction for the transform matrix. Now, let's take sigma to be a cylinder, which corresponds to this cylinder. So S1 direction, the circle direction is the horizontal direction, and the real line, the vertical direction is the longitudinal direction of the cylinder. Then the brain construction, brain setup is like this one, okay? So here we used to have T star sigma, and now it's split into T star R times T star S1, okay? And so it looks like this. Now what you have to do is now apply another set of chain of dualities, S duality, T duality on the circle direction, and then finally T duality on the two torus, okay? And then we end up with this brain configuration. Okay. Now, what happened? Well, D5 brains become NS5 brains. Okay, and that's the only change to the D5 brain. And the NS5 brains, we have N of them. Okay, because this is a length N spin chain. So we, in this case, N is 1, 2, 3, 4. So we have, in this case, we have 4 NS5 brains in this picture, and they become 4 D4 brains, and these three brains become D0 brain, okay? So now I reproduce this table here. Now what you do is you take the decompactification limit where the dual torus decompactifies to R2. And let's look at the NS5 brains and D4 brains, all right? So so they wrap R2 epsilon and this R and this S1, okay? And so these four directions are common okay? So, you can draw a brain picture like this. So the vertical direction is the two torus direction, and NS5 brains extend along the two torus. The horizontal direction is the fiber direction of the T star S1. And if you look at this table, D4 brains goes, well, it's extended along the fiber direction. And so you can draw this kind of picture. Okay, and this picture is nothing but the standard brain construction of the four-dimensional N equals two theory we started with. Okay, now what happens to the D0 brain? So D0 brain comes from a transverse direction, and it ends on an NS5 brain, and it creates an instant. So, and furthermore, this limit where T2 tilde decompactifies to R2 is nothing but the limit where the XYZ spin chain reduces to the XXX spin chain. So from this picture, we more or less see that how the XXX spin chain or transform matrix of the XXX spin chain in the 4D N equals 2 theory, this particular theory, arises from our construction. So this basically explains the connection between our construction and the necklace of Shashvili corresponds for this particular theory. So we'd like to understand this a little bit deeper and make various computations and make everything more precise. Okay, so let me conclude. So in this talk, I hopefully convinced you that string theory is useful in the sense that, well, it allows us to construct integral lattice models using brains, and moreover, relate them to four-dimensional supersymmetric quantum field theories. And there are various further directions of research you can take. For example, in this talk, I used a 3x1 this four-dimensional spacetime to compute the partition function of the 4D theory, but you can try to replace this S3 by another 3-manifold M3. Then what happens is that, well, if you can do this without breaking certain supersymmetries, then you can still compute the partition function. You can define index and compute it. Then all the all the graphical representations of equations remain the same, but the details of the computation of path integral changes. So you get new set of R matrices which solve these set of Young-Baxter equations. So, for example, M3 can be S3, a quotient of S3 by ZR action, so that's a length space, and you can compute the index, and you indeed get new R matrices. And, well, this has been done, but you can also take M3 to be S2 times S1, or sigma, where sigma is any Riemann surface times S1, so this seems to be interesting. If you pick a surface sigma, that defines an R matrix. Okay. You can also construct solutions to the Zamolchikov's tetrahedron equation that defines, so this is a three-dimensional version of the Young-Baxter equation. So you can construct three-dimensional integrable lattice models using brains. And so from the point of view of string theory, so it's probably interesting that some of the quiver gauge theories I studied in my work appears in the context of little string theory or ADS CFT correspondence. So namely, there's something called deconstruction of little string theory. So there's a way to define little string, type 2-bit little string theory using four-dimensional n equals 1 quiver gauge theories. And actually, that quiver gauge theory corresponds to certain integrable lattice model. So integrability appears in the little string theory in this way. Okay, so, and there are, as you see, there are more interesting direction of research. So, I guess this is all I wanted to say today. Thank you.
The Karo-Popp model is famous because it has a heterogeneous spectral curve.
Right.
Can you see in your story why the brains really have to live in a branched cover of the torus?
The short answer is no, I don't. So that's a very mysterious part of the of this. So I mentioned that Bajanov-Sergeyev model reduces in saddle limit to the Karo-Popp model. And then suddenly the curve appears, so we have to closely follow the computation done by. So that computation is explained in the original Bajanov-Sergeyev paper. So I guess I have to understand how this reduction of the Bajanov-Sergeyev model to the Karo-Popp model appears, it looks to me that this curve in their computation appears rather in a technical manner. So there's no clear understanding of why there must be a heterogeneous curve. So I would say, well, it may be possible that if you lift everything to like M theory, then in a similar way, Zeyrig-Witten curve appears. Maybe this Karo-Popp curve appears as a curve, you know, wrapped by M5 brains or something like that. So I think that's possible, but at this point, I don't know. I have no idea.
You mentioned the tetrahedral equation. What does it mean for a three-dimensional lattice model to be integrable?
Right. So three-dimensional lattice model, you can define also a transform matrix called layer-to-layer transform matrix. So it's so in two dimensions, you can construct a transform matrix, and it's called, in this case, row-to-row transform matrix. So transform matrix for 2D theory, 2D models are associated to a horizontal direction in this case. But in the 3D case, you can define a transform matrix to each plane or layer. And then Zamolchikov's tetrahedron equation tells you that these transform matrices commute. And therefore, you can get infinitely many mutually commuting conserved charges. So it's it's a 3D version of the integrability of 2D models.
So I guess the continuum limit is going to be free or something like that.
Sorry, I can't really.
So does it mean the continuum limit is going to be free?
Continuum limit of which one?
Because I guess in three-dimensional, infinitely many conserved charges is not going to make the theory free.
Oh, I see.
Or not.
Let me see. But the.
I think we'll have strings.
Yeah.
Some logic about scattering, string scattering.
Ah.
That's right. We are no longer talking about scattering of particles, but scattering of strings. So they are still intersect.
When you talk about the supersymmetric index, was it really the full supersymmetric index or the half index you were?
All right. So when I took S3 times S1 to be the four-dimensional space-time, when I talked about Bajanov Sergeyev model, so that's the full supersymmetric index. So up until I talk about the connection to your theory, I have been talking about S3 times S1 index. So that's the full index. Then I replaced S3 times S1 by R2 times T2, and then if you compute the index on this geometry, you get something called holomorphic blocks. So that's chiral half. But according to some computations by Nieri and Pasquetti, you really get almost identical formula for the index. The only difference is that the contour, the choice of the contour for the dynamical variable or gauge viscosities is different. But the integrand remains the same.
How does that become the half index, the index on the partition function on the R2 times T2?
All right, so this is a 4D version of the 3D holomorphic block story. So S3 can be constructed using two copies of R2 times S1, or rather disk times S1, and glued in some fashion, right? So in some manner. But here there's an extra S1. So instead of R2 times S1, you have R2 times S1 times S1 or 2 torus here. So it's the direct 4D analog of the 3D factorization of index.
Is there some version which replaces R2 with S2?
R2 with S2? Yeah, sure. Yes. Here. Yes. And the localization computation has been done, I believe. So what you have to do is you just take the answer from there, and then you get a new R matrix. But in this case, the integrand of the index formula is simple, but the choice of the integration contour is more difficult and involves the Jeffrey carbon residue operation. So you have to somehow interpret this choice of contour in the language of integrable lattice models. Well, from the point of view of lattice model, this complicated choice of contour seems, I don't know, so a little bit weird. But definitely R2 can be S2, or in fact can be any Riemann surface. If you topologically twist the theory along the surface, R2 can be replaced by any Riemann surface.
But then you don't have sort of deformation.
Then I don't have...
The negative sort of deformation. The epsilon parameter.
Oh, the epsilon parameter, then you lose epsilon parameter. Yes, indeed. So, but when R2 is S2, then you have epsilon, yes.
Any other questions? Okay, Matt, let's thank Dr. Niao again.